This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. Israel says it shot down a Russian-made Syrian warplane as it crossed into Israeli airspace. But Damascus said the plane was supporting ground operations inside Syrian territory. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the incident violated the 1974 Separation of Forces Agreement. Israel is concerned President Bashar al-Assad will deploy Iranian-backed fighters in the demilitarized zone. Danny Dannon is the Israeli UN ambassador.
We will not allow anyone to breach our sovereignty. We will not allow the Iranians to build their bases next to our borders in the Golan Heights. This is our policy, and Prime Minister Netanyahu is very clear about this. When he meets Mr. Putin, when he meets Mr. Trump, whoever he will meet, he will tell them the same. We will not allow the Iranians to build their bases next to Israel.
UN Mideast envoy Nikolai Mladenov, addressing the Security Council, said these latest tensions point up the threat of conflict along Israel's border with Gaza.
As we meet today, tensions between Syria and Israel continue to rise. While last Saturday, we were minutes away from another devastating confrontation between Israel and Hamas in Gaza.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov met Monday with Mr. Netanyahu, who reportedly rebuffed a Russian offer to keep Iranian forces away from the Golan. Israel demands all Iranian forces leave Syria. The Democratic Republic of Congo declared an end to the recent rash of Ebola cases, which claimed more than 30 lives. It's welcome news to World Health Organization Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus.
The government was quick to respond, quick to invite support where needed, and quick to inform the public about the risks of the disease.
The observation period of 42 days, during which no new confirmed cases were reported, has passed. This is VOA News. President Donald Trump has praised recent satellite imagery showing North Korea beginning to the process of dismantling a rocket test site called the Sohae Satellite Launching Station on the country's northwest coast. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said it's consistent with commitments made by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Singapore in June.
So we've seen the open press reporting about the missile engine test site. It'd be entirely consistent with the commitment that Chairman Kim made to President Trump when the two of them were in Singapore together, made that commitment to them orally. We've been pressing for there to be inspectors on the ground when that engine test facility is dismantled, consistent with Chairman Kim's commitment. And I'll leave it at that for this morning.
The site has been used to develop and test engines for the North's ballistic missile program. Meanwhile, President Trump told a veterans group he hopes the North will fulfill a pledge to repatriate the remains of American servicemen killed in the Korean War.
As you may know, we're also working to bring back the remains of your brothers in arms who gave their lives in Korea. And I hope that very soon these fallen warriors will begin coming home to lay at rest in American soil. That's starting the process.
Pompeo indicated earlier progress had been made. He thought the first of what are believed thousands of remains would be returned in a matter of weeks. Mr. Trump is to meet European Commission Chief Jean-Claude Juncker at the White House Wednesday to discuss trade tensions. Tuesday, he spoke about his pressure campaign against the Europeans.
I said, you have to change. They didn't want to change. I said, okay, good. We're going to tariff your cars. They send millions of cars. Mercedes, all of them. BMW, so many cars. I said, we're going to have to tariff your cars. They said, when can we show up? When can we be there? Would tomorrow be okay? No, folks, stick with us. Stick with us.
German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas said Tuesday Europe won't cave in to Mr. Trump's threats. Meanwhile, the Trump administration announced it will pay up to $12 billion to U.S. farmers to weather the global trade battle. The BRICS summit gets underway in Johannesburg Wednesday with leaders from Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa expected to criticize U.S. protectionist policies. Ahead of the summit, China's President Xi Jinping promised nearly $15 billion of investment in South Africa. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, visiting Uganda, signed a $205 million loan. Pakistanis are voting Wednesday in parliamentary and provincial elections to try to elect a third straight civilian government. Hundreds of thousands of security force members have been deployed. Hundreds of people in the southeast country of Laos are missing, feared dead a day after a hydroelectric dam under construction ruptured, causing flash flooding. Thousands have been made homeless. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's ruling party suffers mass defections to the opposition.
The defection is a poor reflection of the desires of Nigerians who have turned around to discover the People's Democratic Party as a party of choice for 2019 presidential election.
Kola Olugbondinya is the National Publicity Secretary of the opposition People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. Zimbabwe opposition accuses the Elections Commission of poll manipulation. We'll tell you why Malawi's vice president is being called on to resign. BRICS nations hold summit in South Africa, and recent Ebola outbreak in the DRC is declared over.
I think in this case in Congo, what we had was very, very, very effective early containment measures and then an effective scale-up of both national and international partners working together.
Michael Ryan is Assistant Director General of Emergency Preparedness for the World Health Organization. And Rwanda and visiting Chinese president signed bilateral agreements. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Nigeria's opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, says Tuesday's mass defections of 47 legislators from the ruling All Progressives Congress APC party are a realization by Nigerians that President Muhammadu Buhari's policies have failed. 15 senators and 36 members of parliament left the ruling party to join the PDP. APC Chairman Adams Oshomole called the defectors political mercenaries, saying their departure will have no effect on the electoral fortunes of the ruling party. But PDP National Publicity Secretary Kola Olubudenya says the defections mean Nigerians view the opposition as the party of their choice in the February 2019 presidential elections.
Our reaction is that it's in the interest of the people of Nigeria to ensure that President Muhammadu Buhari is not re-elected back into office because of the misrule of his administration.
With this defection, does that mean that the people of Nigeria would rather have the PDP to lead the next government?
Yes, you are correct. The defection is a true reflection of the desires of Nigerians who have turned around to discover the People's Democratic Party as a party of choice for 2019 presidential election. And Nigerians have reached this conclusion. The three-pronged promises made by President Muhammadu Buhari in 2015, he has failed woefully and he has been unable to fulfill either his promise to fight corruption or his promise to revive the Nigerian economy or his promise to fight insurgency. He has not succeeded in any of his promises. And as such, Nigerians have discovered that since the People's Democratic Party has rebranded and has repositioned and is awaiting and is prepared to take upon the challenges of the country, it is better to go with the People's Democratic Party in 2019.
Let me say that I had a chance over the weekend to speak to the Nigerian Information Minister, Lai Mohammed. And he mentioned that Nigeria today under the APC is safer today than when they inherited it from the PDP. He mentioned that the Nigerian military under this government has done enough to reclaim all the land that Boko Haram had.
It is not correct. Before 2015, the PDP administration had driven the insurgents to the fringes of our nationhood. But today, native babies are being attacked. And outside, even if we leave the direct issue of insurgency, there is a brand new insecurity problem that borders on kidnapping across the Federation. And as we speak today, there's so much bloodbath in our nation that even the entire country has returned to a funeral parlor. This is unacceptable to Nigeria.
APC Chairman Adams Oshomole says that those who defected are mercenaries and that their departure will have no effect on the coming election.
The factional national chairman of the All Progressives Congress, Mr. Adams Oshomole, has been adjudged by the majority of Nigerians as an undertaker who has come to bury the All Progressives Congress. it might interest you to know that since Commandant Ushuomole assumed office as a factional chairman of the APC, he has been speaking from both sides of the mouth, not addressing any particular issue.
Is it the position of the PDP that you intend to boycott the 2019 election if the security situation in the country is not resolved?
Was just an expression to tell Nigerians the level of abuse in our electoral process in Nigeria. But let me quickly tell you this, that the People's Democratic Party is very prepared to contest in any free and fair election against any candidate of the All Progressives Congress, including President Muhammadu Buhari in 2019.
Kola Olubodinyan is the National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Zimbabwe's main opposition party has accused the country's Electoral Commission of planning a manipulated general election on July 30th. The Movement for Democratic Change Alliance spoke out after the commission turned down several opposition demands. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission on Tuesday rejected opposition demands for changes to procedures in the next Monday's general election. Among them, a redesign of the presidential ballot paper, which the opposition says gives an unfair advantage to President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Chief Election Officer for the MDC Alliance, Jameson Timba, spoke to VOA after meeting with the Electoral Commission.
The outcome of the meeting is a confirmation that President Mnangagwa and ZEC are committed to a peaceful but manipulated election. All the issues that we put before ZEC have all been turned down. That's where we stand now.
The opposition also wanted to escort ballot papers to polling stations, guard them, and be allowed to test if votes migrated to Mnangagwa. In a telephone interview, the spokesman for the Electoral Commission, Kubani Moyo, confirmed the Tuesday meeting but dismissed opposition demands. He said, quote, all practical demands were met or accepted. No other concessions will be made. It is now a closed chapter, he said. The MDC Alliance said failure to reach an agreement would be met with vigils held at the commission's offices. However, police on Tuesday denied an MDC Alliance request to demonstrate. The opposition had written to police seeking clearance and an escort for a Wednesday demonstration. Tawanda Chimini is director of the Election Resource Center, a think tank and advocacy organization on electoral and democracy issues in Zimbabwe. Chimini questioned the Electoral Commission's assurance that the July 30th election would be free and fair.
We are not out of the woods yet.
He says we are not yet out of the woods. It is important that the finalization of the voters' roll is characterized by strict mechanisms of transparency and accountability. He adds that the roll that will be used on the day of polling must be availed to observers and political agents so that as voting is happening, there's an independent verification of people voting, he adds. Zimbabwe's elections body is facing several lawsuits aimed at making it release the actual voters' roll to be used during next Monday's general election. The Movement for Democratic Change Alliance plans to meet Wednesday to discuss a way forward on their demands. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Today's Wednesday, July 25th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Barty in Washington. Let's send a shout out this morning to the management, the staff, and listeners of KISS 104 FM in Bow, Sierra Leone, on the occasion of your 25th anniversary. Congratulations. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Malawi's information minister has called on Vice President Saulo Chilima to resign. Nicholas Dawusi said the vice president's repeated attacks on the government are hypocritical and shameful. The vice president has said that government corruption has reached embarrassing levels. Mr. Chilima has resigned from the ruling party to form the opposition United Transformation Movement Party, but he has yet to resign from the government. The controversy comes as the Electoral Commission compiles a voter list for next year's general election. For analysis on the political situation, VOA's Peter Clotty reached Vincent Kondwe, a governance consultant and a member of the Political Science Association of Malawi.
The Republican Constitution of Malawi provides for the election of a president together with his running mate. So on that basis, there is no legal authority from which Nicholas Dawusi could say that the vice president is supposed to resign. However, morally, when you talk of collective responsibility in terms of the decisions by the executive arm of the government, yes, one would expect that the vice president is supposed to resign on moral grounds because he is accusing a system of which he has been part and parcel of for the last 4 years or so. The vice president in Malawi does not exercise his own or her own duties. He exercises delegated duties. So if the president did not delegate to him to be able to fight corruption from within the system, then the vice president was an individual who could not be able to bite.
The vice president said that he took steps to alert the president of the ongoing corruption in the administration, including during several meetings, and that it was the president's prerogative to take action. So he should not be blamed for the ongoing corruption of which he made sure the president was aware of those acts. How do you react to that?
There is an oath of secrecy within the cabinet meetings, and the republic is not privy to what goes on. So if the president is making such allegations and that he brought to the attention of the president the corruption that is going on, and then we have got an information minister who has not disputed what the vice president has said, there could be merit in what the vice president is saying. So unless what the vice president is saying is being disputed by the information minister, which he has not done so far, one would be forced to believe that the vice president is saying the truth, and therefore the president was not able to take action against the issues which the vice president had raised.
Vice presidents in Malawi have often had problems with their bosses or the president. How are Malawians reacting to this specific time when you have Vice President Saulo Chilima criticizing the president and, for that matter, the administration of endemic graft?
Since the dawn of Mat Party democracy, all the vice presidents have been lame ducks, and all the vice presidents have not been able to exert their political muscles to the national level where they could command the influence that the current vice president has commanded within the short time that he has differed with his boss. So for the first time, we're seeing a vice president who has come out very, very forcefully in political terms to exert so much influence that he has the nation rallying behind him if the events of the launch of his movement is anything to go by. But historically, no vice president in Malawi has had so much influence as to affect the presidency during elections.
Vincent Kondwe is a governance consultant and a member of the Political Science Association of Malawi. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from Unzuzu in northern Malawi. China, the wealthiest member of the bloc of nations known as BRICS, is looking to further improve its international position as the group holds its annual summit in South Africa this week. Viewers Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa showered praise on his Chinese counterpart during President Xi Jinping's state visit Tuesday, a day ahead of a summit of the economic bloc.
The dynamism of the partnership between China and South Africa derives from a common desire to develop our bilateral relationship. And in fact, our common view is that our relationship between the two countries in many ways has gone beyond just being a bilateral relationship. It is a very strategic relationship which touches on a number of issues where we cooperate extremely well together for the mutual benefit of our two peoples.
And the two put a value on that relationship, signing various economic and investment agreements worth $14 billion. Xi, who was unanimously elected by China's parliament to a new limitless presidential term in March, echoed Ramaphosa's praise as part of what appears to be a push to strengthen all of China's relationships.
We need to build closer, high-level engagement.
In his interpreted comments, Xi praised the relationship, which he said encompassed infrastructure, trade, investment, science, and technology initiatives, and invited Ramaphosa for a state visit in September. But not all of China's relationships are so rosy as they approach this year's summit of the five BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. This year's meeting comes amid a rapidly shifting world order, one that has China as the main target of a brewing trade war in which U.S. President Donald Trump is threatening to impose tariffs on all $505 billion worth of Chinese imports. In response, China has said it will seek to build cooperation with other nations, like those in BRICS. And here, according to China-Africa analyst Kubus von Staden, China is on more comfortable ground.
I think everyone who is actually involved would strenuously deny that there is a pecking order. But I think also the weight of the Chinese economy and the weight of China as an actor in the world, I think, is significant. You can't talk around that.
Von Staden says that other global developments, like the relationship between U.S. President Donald Trump and Russian Vladimir Putin, could also affect this year's summit deliberations, though he said analysts can't predict how. Putin is scheduled to attend the three-day summit, which opens in Johannesburg on Wednesday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The leaders of China and India have been visiting Rwanda, where they signed bilateral agreements to promote economic and social development in that country. Rwandan President Paul Kagame says the visits will help the whole of Africa. Mugumi Davis Rakabrinj reports from Kigali, Rwanda.
Speaking at the function to witness the signing of 15 bilateral agreements between Rwanda and the People's Republic of China, Rwandan President Paul Kagame praised President Xi Jinping and China for working with the African continent.
The signing of these bilateral agreements speaks for itself in terms of what is possible between our two countries and between the country of China and the continent of Africa.
The agreements include visa exemption for diplomatic passport holders, transport, trade, and investment sectors, as well as human resource development. Speaking through an interpreter, Chinese President Xi Jinping explains the reasons for his visit.
I am here this time with the aim to consolidate the traditional friendship between China and Rwanda and to work together with Mr. President, to plan for the future of our bilateral relations and the friendly cooperation between China and Africa, and to see to it that our mutually beneficial cooperation can yield more fruit and our peoples and the people in Africa can have more gains.
Aside from Rwanda, the Chinese leader is also visiting Senegal, South Africa, and Mauritius. President Kagame also praised India's Prime Minister, another leader, to visit Rwanda this week. He said the two leaders had productive discussions that would benefit the two countries and the region.
This visit, the first by the Indian Prime Minister, represents a milestone in the long-standing friendship and cooperation between Rwanda and India. Our two countries share similar ambitions for the prosperity and well-being of our citizens. We appreciate India's support to Rwanda's development agenda.
Speaking through an interpreter on his part, India Prime Minister Narendra Modi praised Rwanda for its efforts towards development after the 1994 genocide. Modi says his country will continue to work with Rwanda to attain development.
It is a matter of pride for us that India has been a trusted partner in Rwanda's economic development and in its national development journey. We will continue to contribute to Rwanda's development journey in the future as well.
Rwanda, a country that witnessed genocide two decades ago, in which about 1 million people were gruesomely murdered, has seen steady socio-economic progress. The country is now ranked as second to the business scene in the African continent, just behind Mauritius, according to the World Bank Doing Business report. For VOA News, I am Gume Davis Ruakarinj in Kigali, Rwanda.
The World Health Organization says the rapid, aggressive, and coordinated health response to the Democratic Republic of Congo's latest Ebola outbreak is largely responsible for quickly containing the deadly virus. WHO and Congo's Ministry of Health officially declared the end of the 9th outbreak of Ebola in the DRC capital, Kinshasa. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Ebola killed more than 11,300 people in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. By the time this devastating epidemic, which began in 2014, was brought to an end 2 years later. In contrast, the Ebola outbreak in the DRC infected 38 people, caused 29 deaths, and was stopped in fewer than 4 months. Michael Ryan is WHO's Assistant Director General of Emergency Preparedness and Response. He was part of the large team of health specialists working on the strategic response plan in DRC. He tells VOA the Ebola outbreak in West Africa quickly spiraled out of control because of delays in detecting the event and getting a full-scale operation underway to combat the virus.
I think in this case in Congo, what we had was very, very, very effective early containment measures and then an effective scale-up of both national and international partners working together. So that's the difference for me. I know it sounds extremely simplistic, but in many of these situations, it's the simple things that make the difference, speed and coherence.
Ryan says it is too early to suggest the vaccine used in the operation has played a significant role in stopping the epidemic. He believes the rapid identification of cases and contacts, as well as contact tracing and follow-up, were probably the major factors in containing the disease. He notes, however, the presence of the vaccine has provided the affected communities with an element of hope that they could survive this fatal disease.
The aim of vaccination is to protect those people who are potentially being exposed. But the fact that you're bringing something that can help protect people, it just introduces that element of hope rather than hopelessness.
Ryan warns the Ebola virus could reemerge, so extensive follow-up measures are necessary. He says intensive surveillance is continuing and that much hard work lies ahead to strengthen the health system so it can rapidly detect and respond to future outbreaks. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A spokesman for Nigeria's opposition People's Democratic Party, PDP, says Tuesday's mass defections of 47 legislators from the ruling All Progressives Congress, APC party, are a realization by Nigerians that President Muhammadu Buhari's policies have failed. 15 senators and 36 members of parliament left the ruling party to join the PDP. That's it for this Wednesday, July 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We invite you to join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturday. Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.